everyone, and welcome to a new season of Christina D'Arcangelo called Humanitarian Horizons, Christina D'Arcangelo Unveiled. This is our second podcast. We're very excited to launch this because as all of our listeners and viewers and however else you got a hold of us, noticed that the last 2 years I focused on who I was as a human and how I interact with other professionals or people in the communities that I support or I liaise with, so that you could kind of get a feel as to who Christina D'Arcangelo was, as well as showing people that at the end of the day, we are the same, that there's something that makes us the same and every human together. So that was our purpose last season. This season, we're getting into the nitty gritty, talking about humanitarian focused efforts. And so with me, I have a guest that I had on my other season, who I'm very excited to have on with me again. We go back to, oh my God, I think 2016, I believe, Darshan?
2018.
Okay, because I got in cannabinoids in 2016. So that's why I thought you have a great memory. So I want to welcome you back on again. And do you mind just giving everybody a little bit of your background and what it is that you do day to day? Because you do a lot of things day to day. You're not just one type of professional. You do multiple things.
I do. And thank you for having me on again. It's wonderful to be back. My name is Darshan Kulkarni. I am an attorney. I'm a pharmacist. I work in FDA regulated areas. I have over 20 years of experience as a pharmacist. I teach at multiple universities. I also work extensively in and with diverse populations, specifically trans individuals. I do a podcast on the topic of trans individuals called Not Alone. And I've been doing that for a few years, I believe, at this point. And I do a fair bit of work around diverse populations and their inclusion in clinical research. So, and in sort of other ways, I serve on various boards, which hope to, in some way, help people understand and realize the opportunities to sort of include people in these evolving times. And one of the things I'm excited about is that the FDA is finally starting to pay more attention to what this looks like. And the result of that has been a number of guidances, a number of opinions on the role of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the clinical research process. So Christina, offline before we jumped on, you were talking about how you want to make that, or you do make that, a focus of your podcast. I'm excited to be here to talk more about it.
Yes, I'm so excited to have you on, because when I originally reached out for you to be on this podcast, we were going back and forth electronically, and you were like, well, what do you want to talk about? And I was like, this is what I want to talk about. And then I saw a post of yours come out 2 days ago on LinkedIn, which you could tell I thoroughly read before I came on today. Because this is a sweet spot for me, you know, being in the biotech, pharmaceutical, nutraceutical device space for as many years as I have been, I've always noticed the issue, right? And I'm always wondering why we didn't do anything about it. Why did we have to wait for the FDA to tell us, hey, guys, you need to do this? I mean, humans are humans, right? We are all different people. We come from different cultural backgrounds, different races, and things of that nature. So wouldn't it have made sense that years ago, especially pediatrics, right? I don't want to get on the pediatric bandwagon, but you know where I'm coming from, Darshan, where we've just like been in a bubble, just enrolling patients that we needed, because yes, it is tough to do patient enrollment. I live and die by patient enrollment constantly, but there are ways that you can enroll diverse populations by using the right partners, especially technology, right? Which y'all know I have SAPTM, which has that ability to find patients through our Metacrawler bot. So we can help find these patients. And this is not a sales pitch today. I wanted to talk about the specifics on why hasn't it been happening? Why do you think it hasn't been happening?
Now, I think I want to understand the question a little bit closer. You're saying, why has there been no drive to include more diverse populations? Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that the key piece for me comes down to intent, comes down to politics. I think overall, I don't think there's too much of an argument that people who should be there should be there. I think the question comes down to who should be there. And what I mean by that is there was a recent Supreme Court decision involving the Harvard situation, the Harvard admission situation, which spoke about the role of DEI and whether students can get into Harvard simply because they are Black or Asian or something else. And the court basically came out and said, no, that's not enough. You Harvard can't take this easy path of going, oh, we have two people who are equal, we'll choose the one who's diverse. No, what you've got to do is you've got to make your funnel bigger. And you've got to recruit more diverse people if that's what you're looking for. So what people were questioning was, is diversity become a checkbox system as opposed to a way of getting qualified people into the system? So in the same way, I think, and the reason I say that is because it's had political ramifications. There was a recent Wall Street Journal article where they were talking about how Google, and I want to say Microsoft maybe, have dramatically cut back. And this is going across a lot of corporate streams right now. They've dramatically cut back their DEI programs. Yesterday's news was the Philadelphia Inquirer cut back on their DEI coordinator, the Philadelphia Police Department. I don't want to speak too much about that because I actually have a personal stake in that. But the point being, in those scenarios, they cut back, and that's obviously where the world's going. But when you speak to people going, you're making cutbacks, what is your thought process here? Their argument is, we want the most qualified people there, not just the people who are most diverse. So there's this balance that's trying to happen. On the other hand, 2020, so that's going back 4 years. There was a discussion not that long ago about how people were feeling excluded. People were feeling like, there's no one like me on screen. There's no one like me in these trials. And yet you're making me subject to a lot of the drugs that you think I should be able to tolerate pretty well. It's been known for decades at this point, for example, that Latino populations don't manage lactose as well as, say, white populations. But we don't have those studies that say, you know what, do we need a different formulation or the like for this? And we don't do those studies. Well, maybe you don't want to do like a disease-specific or a population-specific study as you continue. However, there's nothing wrong in including those individuals more extensively in your trials. Do you actually have a process of making your funnel bigger? Mm-hmm. Do you have a process of ensuring that these people will be part of your clinical trials? And that's really what the FDA has been asking for. So under the new Federa law, you've got a situation where the FDA is being expected, and the FDA put out a guidance on this topic recently. And what they're saying is, we want to have more people who are going to be included. And we want you sponsors to have a diversity plan for including these people in your studies. So let's see how this plays out. But that's where we are right now.
Yeah. And I'm so for this, because to your point, when you look at the advertisements for these study, you know, the drugs that have now been approved, right?
Yeah.
The people don't look like everybody in the world, right? They just look like a certain subset population. And, you know, being on the advocacy side, you know, the patient advocacy side that you and I both are on.
Yeah.
And we talk to a lot of patients, right?
Yeah.
And we're hearing it firsthand from these patients. I mean, I know that when we were running enrollment for a specific study, I can't mention what it was, but there was a specific study, and everything was running through the nonprofit, right? Because the nonprofit mm-hmm. is able to talk to the patients directly. They're not running the clinical trial. They're just a supportive arm to help, because they actually understand all these various treatment areas, because these patients are already coming anyway, right? And one of our jobs through APA is to educate the patients that come to us. They're not subjects yet. They're just patients. that come to us about clinical trials. And a lot of the things that we hear is fear from non-Caucasian patients. Yeah. They're fearful about what's going to happen to them in these clinical studies because there's so much stigma surrounding clinical studies and these populations of people. There is a mismatch with respect to trust. So we've got to do a better job educating about clinical studies, first off, and why we need these patients in these studies and why it's important for them to trust us.
Right.
But also, we have to do it in an ethical manner. We can't just put up a donut shop sign and stand out there and try and recruit people at a donut shop when they're trying to get donuts. Like, that's not how it works. You can't do that. Who's going to believe anybody that's standing outside a donut shop? I'm just, you know, bringing it up as an example. It has to be done in a manner that people feel safe because a lot of people don't.
I think you point out a really important part of this whole process, which is in the end, this comes down to an issue of trust. And we've got decades of losing trust. And I wish I'd looked into this a little bit further. I think the industry does a good job in trying to be inclusive. However, for every 100, I'm making up a number here, for every 100 times that the industry tries to do good, if there's one instance where you do bad, that may wipe out everything good that you've done, not because you intended it, but because it's just how people remember things. And I'm talking about things like Tuskegee or Willowbrook. These happened decades ago, and we're still paying the price for not looking after patients, for treating patients like they were
cattle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The reason I stopped just short of saying cattle was we shouldn't be treating cattle like that anyways. That's a different discussion altogether.
Right.
But the point being, we have done a terrible job building that trust. And what we need to do is work towards rebuilding it and rebuilding. I had a student who actually looked into trust with patients. And one of the solutions that industry follows overall is we just go, oh, you know what? We had a bad episode. Our solution is to do more good than bad. Unfortunately, that's not how trust works. Based on her research, what we discovered was you've got to go back and address the bad stuff before you can start doing more good stuff. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we don't do a good job with that. We are always moving forward. We are, for better or for worse, an innovation-driven industry, which means we're always looking forward. Unfortunately, that means that the trauma you caused in the past is not being addressed, which means that you're not building the trust moving forward. And interestingly enough, you have less of an issue in other countries with research than you do in this country. So I think that that has its positives and negatives. And what I mean by that is I can guarantee you that you probably have much bigger issues in other countries. However, those other countries don't even record them. Therefore, they don't even publicize them. And therefore, most people don't even know that it's happening. We are at least wise enough to point out the problems we have as an industry, and we are trying to fix them. But I think that if we're going to make a collective effort to move forward, we've got to address those problems in the past and do it not just at a local level, a state level, or a country level, but maybe talk about it at an international level.
Mm-hmm.
And that broader perspective is where we're going to start having an impact.
I am completely 100% with you there because, you know, before we got on, we were talking about this and what we're doing, you know, this year and next year and where our focus on specifically in these specific populations of individuals that have been unmet, you know, specifically, you know, I'm talking about the indigenous people. We have a lot of indigenous people in the United States.
Yep.
We have various tribes. I don't know if you know this, but in Canada, Trudeau has released this year, starting this year, I think it was 4.8 million to the indigenous community because the people are still being raped and murdered and their lands being stolen and kids are committing suicide because of the way they're being treated at school. Women are being raped. There's a lot of problems, right? Yeah. And those poor people need help, right? They have a lot of different issues, especially mental health is very big up there, and PTSD. So the fact that Trudeau was last year, he said, listen, we know what we've done. We are very sorry. I'm not saying we throw money at the problem, Darshan. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is they at least put their foot forward, not to be this, not to turn this into a political discussion, like how we believe whatever about Trudeau. I don't care about him. But the point, what I'm trying to make is he messed, the country messed up. He's taking accountability. He's falling on his sword.
Yeah.
And he's ensuring that he bridges that gap between the Canadian individuals that are living there and the Indigenous Canadians that need help the most.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think like you're pointing out, it's that looking back that is such a valuable component of sort of including people, making them be part of these studies. It's interesting to me. The FDA has put out a couple of DI guidances. There's one in 2022, there was one in 2020, both of which addressed the role of DEI in clinical research. What's interesting to me is sort of these next pieces that are taken care, that are being considered. The FDA has put out a guidance on patient-focused drug development, literally in the last 2 weeks, I want to say, they put out a guidance on digital health technologies and remote data acquisition. And the reason that's important is how are you going to get these Indigenous people who may not have the wherewithal to actually come to wherever your site is? How are you going to include them in your studies? And I think as we move, COVID, for better or for worse, had a lot of problems. But one of the good things that came out of it was this idea that remote subjects are going to be more acceptable. Right. That's not a genie that's going to go back in the box very easily. And that means we can include more patients. And if we can include those patients, we can bring more diverse voices that may not have been able to be included in the past. So I'm excited for what that looks like and coming up with helping sponsors come up with diversity plans that address exactly that issue. So let's see where that goes.
I agree with you. I think that this has to be the year where we do something about this. Right. Instead of talking about it, some of us are talking about it, but we're not really doing anything about it. Right. Last year, one of our goals was specifically, as you can tell, was specifically rooted to work on this so that when we started doing things this year, we had our best foot forward where we were smart enough to figure out a way to get these patients into our studies based on the development of a research center, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of sponsor companies don't want to get involved in that stuff. But if we really want to help people medically, we've got to do some things that might be uncomfortable for you to achieve our greater good goal, which is to help patients regardless of where they sit or how they put their shoes on. We need to do better at the end of the day.
And I think it's interesting, we're seeing companies more, I think pharma is more reactive. It's a more conservative space. And when I say, the reason I say that is I think ESG goals and DEI goals are still important. You're seeing some of the more corporate environments sort of turn that plug quickly and go, we're reacting to what the Harvard decision was. And it is what it is. You're seeing pharma companies still take a more progressive view and go, look, we're not saying that that's good or that's bad. We're just sort of going, we want to have more patients in these populations because having more patients means that our drugs represent our patients. And that's good, not just for the patients, but for our drugs. So our profit aligns with our research. And I think that's the way you've got to address this anyways. My personal opinion, I don't think you're going to get much progress with simply saying doing good is enough. Like, we think you should do good. When you can help these companies see that this helps your profit margin, that's when they go, look, I'm good with that. Because if I can make people feel good and yet make a bigger profit, we're all on the same side.
Right. And also, it's not just about making the profit. It's to get the money that they put out initially to do the studies because they are very expensive. So I don't want people to think we're beating up on pharma because they're trying to make a profit. That's not what we're trying to deliver as far as what we're talking about today.
Correct.
What we're trying to do is say that, you know, we know drug development costs are excruciatingly expensive.
It's about $4 billion a year. $4 billion a drug, if I remember correctly.
It's a lot of money. So if they can kind of put that hat on and go, okay, we're going to get our money back in return if we're successful with this drug,
correct,
by ensuring this inclusion occurs up front.
Correct.
I think that is the best way to message it. Because we don't want to talk too much about profits because then it looks like we're greedy, which is what we get.
Correct. Return on investment is what we're really
ROI.
Referring to. And exactly. And I think this is happening in so many different ways. And I work with sponsors in so many different ways. Some of it is they're getting sponsorship now from nonprofits. Nonprofits are now saying, we'll fund your drug as long as you make sure that our interests are being protected as well. So I'm making up a situation here, but I'm part of some nonprofits that are funding this type of work. But for example, if let's say I'm making this up, the African American Chamber of Commerce, I have no idea if this organization even exists, but let's say the African American Chamber of Commerce says, we'll give you $15,000, but we want a board seat because you are a seed fledgling organization. We want to be part of it. We want to make sure that, you never charge, more than X for the drug, or you can charge more than X for the drug. However, we want to be part of that process so that we know why that is necessary. Mm-hmm. Or we want to make sure that population that look like us are part of the studies so that we know that there is value being brought to our population. We're not just going to give you the money because it's out there. We want to make sure that our needs, our interests are being protected. And you need this money right now. You may not need it in 15 years, but in 15 years, you will make sure you remember the promise, the duty you owe to us as a people, not just the profits of the shareholders. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
We'll see what happens. I guess we should probably end because we can go on and on about this topic as we always do when we get together.
Absolutely.
But we can come back on at a later time, later this year, as we watch. I know that you'll be watching very closely. You're working on a lot of these efforts already, from the regulatory legal side with the sponsors. And obviously, you know, I'm on the clinical side, the tech side, the patient advocacy side. You're on the advocacy side too. But I think we could come back again and talk about maybe in a few months where we are. Like, let's do a temperature check. Has there been any improvements? What are we seeing now? Are people really trying to do this? Because we really need to start doing it now.
I love it. I'd love to do that. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being on. I so much appreciate you taking time, especially since we just got out of the new year. And here we are, popped on the first Friday of the new year, shooting a podcast. So thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Thanks again.
My pleasure. And as always, thank you all for joining us. I am Christina D'Arcangelo.